And welcome to Why Is This a Thing? Documentary Month comes to a close today, gentlemen. The final episode in our annual celebration of all things true.
Final? Like, we're not doing this anymore? Ever?
Well, just for this year. This is the last week that we get to celebrate truth, justice, and the American way.
Well, you got the listeners' hopes up for just a second that we'd be done.
Yeah.
I think they're tired of this one, guys. It's time to call it quits.
Idea. We're finally setting this dead horse to the glue factory.
You know, I got an alert on my phone, my personal calendar today, that I set, I think, a year ago. That, of course, we missed again. That for April Fool's Day, which is tomorrow for the listeners, we were going to review, what was it?
Citizen Kane?
No.
I don't remember what this idea was.
Yeah. I thought we were going to review Citizen Kane and talk shit about it.
Wait till you hear this dumb shit. Oh, God. We were going to review Catcher in the Rye, the book.
Oh, my God.
Whose idea was that?
I think it was yours, to be honest.
Catcher in the Rye, the book. What?
Why didn't we do that?
That's a good idea.
Do we have enough time to change ship? Or to change course?
Oh, God. I need to reread that book.
I do, too. I haven't read that in years.
It's been ages, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, next year, I guess.
Sorry, Holden. We let him down.
I can't Poor believe Holden. Us. Poor I can't Holden. Believe it. Caulfield. We always have the idea like 2 days after the holiday. Mm-hmm. Groundhog Day, every year we continue to miss it.
Isn't that shtick now? I feel like the Groundhog Day thing has become our shtick.
Oh, it's, yeah. Yeah,
and that sucks. I hate that because I love that idea, no, but we can't do it now.
And it's an awful bit.
But at this point, I feel like it would be out of character to review the movie.
It only would have been a good bit if we recorded it in like 2017 and we have just re-released that episode every year for the past 5 years. Like, that would be hilarious.
We always draw attention to the fact that we miss it, though. That's the problem.
Right.
So.
We're awful at what we do. I think that's the bottom line. We're really bad at this.
And, I mean, we're good at something. I don't know.
We're good at something.
I don't know what it is.
We haven't found that yet. We'll get there.
We're good at keeping the same 100-something listeners entertained. Mm-hmm. But I'm not really sure what that says about us or the listeners. But we thank you for continuing to stick with us here at Why Is This a Thing?
Fuck the audience.
Fuck the audience. That's right. Should we just get into it? Anything that we wanted to catch up on from our lives? What are you eating over there?
Why do you always have to point out what I'm eating?
Because the listeners are noticing the crinkling of the plastic.
Don't you know what he's eating? He's in the same room as you.
It's behind the monitor, obscured from my view.
Some ASMR.
Oh, God. Oh, that's a bad sound.
Did you not offer me an M&M?
No.
Well, cough it up.
What are you going to do about it?
You want him to baby bird it into your mouth? Is that what I heard? You want him to cough the M&M?
There's more than a few there.
All yellow ones.
You fucking asshole.
Nick, what's your stance on peanut M&Ms?
Oh, my God. Peanut or peanut butter?
Peanut.
Yeah, peanut M&Ms are inferior.
Agreed.
Absolutely inferior. Do not like them, though.
Yes, I actively dislike
them. Because I don't mind a peanut M&M. I can, but yeah, if you were to ask me like, 10 times out of 10, I will pick the originals. Sure.
I mean, I don't know whose dumb fucking idea it was to put nuts in candy.
Well,
but look at us.
Fuck that person.
All on the same page on this one.
Seriously.
Now,
I feel the same way about Kit Kats.
Oh,
I don't like crunchy candy. Take the wafer out of my fucking candy.
No, I like crunchy.
I do like that. Yeah. I love a crunch bar. I love a crunch bar. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when it comes to M&Ms, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I agree that the peanuts are definitely inferior. That being said, pretzel M&Ms are amazing.
Those work.
Those are really good.
Well, chocolate covered pretzels are kind of a staple.
Exactly.
Here's the thing though, like that, the Mars company, really, they got one product and they really need to stay in their lane. You know what I mean?
Sure. I can't believe we agree on this. Cause I think if you did opinion polling,
they would say
it would slice like 70-30 in favor of peanut.
Yeah, you think probably. So? You think that high?
I do.
Wow.
Same like with the Coke Pepsi argument.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you know? Definitely.
Actually, I was just talking to DeFeo the other day, though. He is also a Pepsi guy.
DeFeo's fucking weird.
And he has the same life that I do. The same life. This is the same shared experience that Joe and I have, and all Pepsi drinkers out there.
Yeah.
Is that we'll go to a restaurant and we'll order a Coke thinking that they only have Coke, and they'll say, is Pepsi okay? As if they're about to stab you. You know what I mean? Like, as if you're going to be so offended by the notion that they're offering you Pepsi. I am offended by the notion. And you have to console the waiter slash waitress and be like, no, in fact, I will not be drinking sewage water. It is okay that you are offering me Pepsi.
Sewage water is the Pepsi. Now what are you talking about?
For the listeners across the country, all right, in Connecticut is one of those states where we refer to cola as Coke.
Yes.
Just
correct.
All yes. cola is just, I'll have a Coke.
Yes. Some people call it pop.
Yeah.
Pop.
That's a thing.
Not in Connecticut.
No, certainly not.
I find it really weird out here that people, they don't say sneakers. They say tennis shoes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even
that's kind of weird. Well, they're not tennis shoes.
What are you saying?
All sneakers are referred to as tennis shoes.
We talk about this a lot, guys.
All right, I'm at the gym, and there are these young...
I've never heard this.
There are these young kids, and they're like, oh, I'm going to get out of my tennis shoes. And they're not going to play tennis. I'll tell you that.
They're like wearing Jordans?
Yeah, regular sneakers.
Tennis shoes.
They're called tennis shoes. It's a thing.
I'm wearing Kanye's now.
Are you wearing some Yeezys?
I'm wearing some Yeezys.
Yeah.
That's right.
The billion-dollar shoe? I got to get me a pair. They're so damn expensive,
fuck
though.
Fuck that.
I have a friend that has them, and they're a gorgeous shoe. But
think about this. If you could make a product that could appeal to, like, Elon Musk or Kanye and sell it for $1 billion, you have a $1 billion company. You just sell the one. You just sell the one shoe. Yep. If you sell one pair of shoes for $1 billion, you have $1 billion company.
Yeah.
Sell the sneaker NFT.
There you go. Now we're talking. I'm against buying NFTs, but selling them, I'm on board. I like
Dude,
that.
We gotta make an NFT. Do you know what an NFT is, Adam?
No.
So, oh boy, how do we explain this?
It's nonsense. It's bullshit.
So. The Bitcoin world, the crypto world, has embraced this idea of art trading.
Art trading?
Art trading. Okay. You know how, you know, most millionaires and billionaires will often invest in fine arts in order to hedge against inflation. So you'll buy a Picasso, you'll buy a Da Vinci, whatever. I guess you don't buy a Da Vinci, but maybe a Picasso. Da Vinci's aren't really available that much. That's just a way of sort of keeping your money safe. Well, the crypto world, crypto investors have thought this is a great idea. Let's do it digitally. So they've invented these things called non-fungible tokens or NFTs. And essentially it is pieces of art or other digital assets that only one of exists in the world and that you can buy for a ridiculous amount of money.
Basically, instead of buying the Mona Lisa, you can buy this specific JPEG of the Mona Lisa.
Correct.
Or you can buy this specific MP3 file of Jimmy Eat World's The
yes.
Middle.
Correct.
For a million Bitcoin or whatever the fuck price.
Yeah, for an exorbitant amount of money.
Although, obviously, there are hundreds, thousands, millions of duplicates of that file.
Yes.
You have the one.
You have the one.
It's a...
And because in some cases they are
unique pieces of art. In some cases, like, artists are selling their artwork as NFTs exclusively.
Right. But because of the blockchain, they can determine that that is the one, you know?
So you are the guy that owns the JPEG of the Mona Lisa. Here's another ridiculous example that will make no sense to you. In the NBA, they have these video clips. I forget what they're calling them. They're like NBA highlight clips, essentially, of a Zion Williamson dunk, of a Steph Curry three-point shot, of a LeBron James pass. And these little clips will be sold on the NFT market for, at times, upwards of $500,000. These are clips that you can access anywhere. You can see them on YouTube. You watch them when you're watching the games. It's not like you have a unique copy of the video, but you are buying it because... the blockchain has determined this is an asset worth something.
Okay.
So you are the one guy that owns a video clip of this play for $500,000.
All right.
And see, essentially, one thing if you're these buying... are not real assets. You can't touch these things. No. It's all just imaginary stuff that we're assigning value to.
I see. It'd be one thing if you're buying like 30 seconds of a reel from Alfred Hitchcock that's never been released before, right?
The actual print, the film negative,
right?
That I could actually play on my screen. Yeah.
But no, this is absolute bullshit.
Right. And in many cases, when you're buying the NFT, you can just play the video in the marketplace. So it's not like if in some instances, like when they sold that Wu-Tang album with the, when Martin Shkreli bought the Wu-Tang album like 10 years ago, and it was like, this is the only album that we're going to print, and he bought it, and it's like, I'm not going to let anyone listen to it. That's actually, you know, that it is an exclusive album that really does not exist anywhere else. He spent like $10 million on that thing. This is not the case here because it's not a physical item.
Yeah.
You can't touch it. You can't own it.
So like I could get like, I don't know, like a JPEG of Damien Hirst's formaldehyde shark.
Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Sure. Anything you can imagine. The Kings of Leon just released their latest album as an NFT. I believe, or they're at least planning to release it as an NFT.
Damn, why haven't you pursued this lifestyle?
I have.
No, I mean like the curator of this shit. This seems listen, like your bag. Listen,
balls are in motion, Adam. Balls are in the air.
I've met a few guys.
Let me tell you. Let me see if I can pull up an NFT marketplace. No, but I'm saying what we should do is we should take like a clip from this podcast and put it out as an NFT.
That's not a bad idea.
Right?
I mean, it's... Yeah. Clipping this podcast?
Do we have any
nothing?
I don't know. The only thing we can maybe get is like something from one of the people we've interviewed, but like I don't know.
So OpenSea.com or .io is like the big trader. It's the biggest NFT marketplace.
Why don't we sell Jabril's David Lynch voice and just scam the shit out of everybody?
So let me give you, see, so look at all this. These are all non-fungible tokens. Do you see all that stuff? So this one right here, it's just like, I don't even know what this is. This is going for $850 right now. It's just a sketch of like an alien creature that you can literally draw up in 3 seconds. Let me see if you can, let's look NBA. NBA 2K is going for $500,000.
Oh my God.
See, this is all just imaginary stuff that you can't actually own. And it's a big craze and people are swallowing these things up.
How much do you think a picture of the nutrition facts for a Big Mac would go for?
This is an interesting... So like I could do a picture
and does
of
McDonald's
my...
own that? Could I sell it?
I don't think you... The nutrition facts, I'm not sure.
So like I could sell like a picture of my Mountain Dew Code Red with the M&Ms beneath it. Mm. Do a little nice,
or even better, the code on the under the cap.
Oh, there we go, and make money off of that.
Maybe.
What about just the blue M&M?
What about a watermarked Getty image?
You guys laugh, but like,
I'm trying to figure out who owns these things. How do you determine who
owns
it?
The cash is out there. The cash is out here. It's ripe for the picking.
Out there.
It's ripe for the picking.
We can use it to fund our podcast that we so desperately need.
Let's do it. You know what? Fuck it. TMT NFT. It's coming soon.
You figure out how to do it.
Coming soon.
I'm on board.
Too Many Thoughts NFTs will be hitting the market.
All right.
I love this. Okay. Documentary month.
Yep.
Let's go. We are talking about a movie from 2015 called The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened? Worst title of all time.
I'm not sure if you can call it a movie either.
It's a movie, but like, yeah.
Very loose.
Sure. Sure. Directed by John Schnepp. Rest in peace.
Now, he was the guy that was just hanging out in every frame,
he's
right?
Dead, is he?
Yes, he is.
He's dead?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
John Schnepp is dead?
Yeah. You didn't know this?
I didn't know who he was, so I didn't know that he
died. Like a YouTube, like all those like famous like YouTube critics that everyone knows, like especially on the Screen Junkies channel.
Oh.
Like good friends with like everyone across the board there. But yeah, he died.
Oh, no, I feel horrible.
Yeah.
Do you know how he died?
Honestly, dude, it might have been a heart attack.
I mean, he didn't look like a particularly healthy guy.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he died 2018. He was only 51 years old.
Yep. Really, like, shook the YouTube community, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I was going to make fun of this guy. Thank God you told me. I got to scrap all my jokes now.
You can still make fun of him. I'm sure he'd appreciate it. But
oh, that's horrible. Okay, because I was wondering, like, who is this dude? And, like, why does he have the money to make this documentary?
Well, also, why was he hanging out in every frame?
Yeah.
He was just there.
Thank you.
Like, I understand the interview format, interviewer, interviewee sitting next to each other. But typically, you don't just show this guy without ever saying, hey, do you know who this guy is? We're not going to explain.
I don't think it's that.
He's not talking. He's just there.
He's nodding a lot.
Okay, I see what you mean, but I've seen it done where it, like, doesn't bother me because the guy looks like a normal person. John Schnepp does not look like a normal person.
He does not look normal.
That's the problem.
Oh, man. Yeah. Look, 60 Minutes knows how to do it. Just copy and paste. Like, this is what I can't stand about some of these documentaries. Don't reinvent the wheel. Like, we know the format. We know what works. We know how lower thirds and framing is supposed to work together. And just leave it. Leave it.
Yep.
Don't reinvent the talking head, man.
Eh.
But whatever.
It was interesting because there were both scenes where he would not be talking at all. Just the interviewee talking, which is obviously the point of the documentary. But then there would also be scenes where it's just him talking next to the big important figure, Tim Burton or something. Like, he's in the room with Tim Burton and we're spending 45 seconds watching this guy talk.
It's the most surreal.
And then it cuts to a new scene where Tim Burton has not said a word.
It is more surreal seeing John Schnepp next to Tim Burton than anything in any Tim Burton movie. That's the best thing.
Why does Tim Burton's house look like a Tim Burton movie?
Well, it's crazy,
it looks
dude.
Just like it.
He looks like he lives in, like, an old gothic clock tower that was converted into a barn.
He's wearing sunglasses in a dark room. Fucking asshole.
It's pitch black in there. There's, like, some, like, extraterrestrial goo, like, seeping out of the walls.
There's a gargoyle in the background. Oh, man.
Oh, it's nuts.
It is exactly what you would expect.
It is. It is crazy that
also,
that's
there was no level floor. It was like every room was on a different elevation. Yes. Did you see that in the background? You know how some houses have like dips and stuff? They'll have like the main room will dip down a step. Every room was like that on this floor that I could tell.
But it's like that Seinfeld episode where Kramer's like, levels. All different kinds of levels. Levels, Jerry.
I'm not gonna lie. I this entire hour 40 documentary, I was just so focused on Tim Burton's home.
Yes, it's hard not to be.
Even though the room could not have been like lit in a worse way.
That's the thing. It's like
this is like a really shoddily shot documentary.
Yeah.
And I understand it's crowdsourced. This was like a Kickstarter project that evidently a YouTuber just threw together.
Yes.
And I'm sure to the people that donated money to it and that enjoyed it, like, it really means a lot to them and they could care less about, like, hair lighting.
I didn't but this is part of the thing is, like, even John Schnepp just being in the frame doesn't really bother me that much because it just feels like you're, like, what we're doing right now, just sitting in a room and just hanging out with people.
Our podcast is better lit, though. Let's be fucking honest.
Than this? I would argue against what we're in right now, but maybe our videos, yeah.
Definitely. It's not even close.
Yeah.
But I feel bad for making fun of him. I'm sorry. I apologize to John Schnepp.
Yes.
I did not realize this was just
You feel bad because he's dead? If he was alive, you would not feel bad? I don't understand the logic. There's because no...
One does not speak ill of the dead, Nick.
Yes, they do. But what do you have to... What about
you
Hitler?
You can speak ill of...
I have plenty of negative things to say about
it. We can criticize a documentary he made. We can do that.
Sure, we can.
Yeah, but like now I feel like this was like his life's work in many ways. Like this is sort of the culmination of what he was doing online.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, that I feel bad about. I'm sure this means a lot to a lot of people. And it's like, you know.
Well, it's hard to say this is the culmination of what he was doing. I have a feeling he would have made many, many more videos like this. Mm. This is just like his first foray into doing any sort of documentary filmmaking. So.
Yeah, no, I get it. I just have a hard time, like, picking on the little movies. You know? I always feel a little weird about, like, this is a really tiny movie. I think about when we did the After Porn End series and Bryce Wagner was, like, going through Twitter and he found our podcast of him just us just trashing his life's work. And, like, I don't know.
I'm just proud that he quoted me. I'm just saying he quoted me.
And Bryce is a great sport. Yes. And I love the guy. But, like, you know, I always feel bad now. I'm a little self-conscious. It's one thing if we're picking on Zack Snyder. It's another thing if we're picking on
this,
you know, John Schnepp, who is not only a small YouTuber, but also a dead small YouTuber.
A beloved YouTuber as well. That's the other thing. It's okay. He gets it. He gets it. I will say, like, the better version of, first of all, I do like this movie for what it is. But yeah, the better version of this, where it's actually like a little more thorough, I suppose, and more competently shot, would be like Jodorowsky's Dune.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I could not help but compare this to Jodorowsky's Dune the whole way through.
Yeah.
A big problem, though, is somehow, maybe this sounds crazy, but it's definitely not, Jodorowsky is way more compelling than Tim Burton.
Yes, yeah, but that's obviously not, it's not Tim Burton. Hey, Tim Burton is not this movie. Let's be very clear.
Yeah.
It's another guy.
It kind of is, though.
No, it's another guy.
It is.
Let's be very clear about this. Fucking hell. Yeah.
The man's name is John Peters.
Uh-huh.
He is, I think, the antagonist of this movie.
Yep.
And it's one of the things I appreciated, I think, most about this, mm-hmm. and where it sort of stands in contrast with Jodorowsky's Dune is Jodorowsky's Dune is this what if about a movie that we suspect would have been good.
Yes.
And this is a movie, a what if about a movie that we suspect would have been very, very bad.
But an interesting bad.
It's certainly an interesting bad. And I would kill somebody to see this movie.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Absolutely. So do we all agree then that, like, every idea in this does not sound good?
Yeah, because this movie would have been a disaster.
I don't know why. The movie kind of approaches this as if the Nick Cage Superman movie that doesn't exist would have been a good idea. But I don't see Nick Cage as Superman directed by Tim Burton. I don't see that working.
I don't see it with John Peters producing it either. John Peters is a very notorious.
I don't think he's the fatal flaw here.
Yes, he is.
I don't think he's the only flaw. Maybe is another way to put it.
Not the only flaw. I agree with that. But yes, he's definitely the biggest issue with this story, I suppose. But he's a notorious figure in Hollywood, and I mean, Jesus Christ, there's like a lot of interesting stuff that was said about it. First of all, like, I had heard about this entire story, like, when I was in college before this movie even had come out, because Kevin Smith released this like long like video where he goes really in depth about this. And it's actually hilarious.
I love the line where Kevin Smith in this movie goes, you know, the my bread and butter was not writing Superman. My bread and butter was talking about writing Superman.
He gets himself very well.
You know, Kevin Smith is not a great filmmaker by any stretch. We also take a lot of shots at him on this podcast, but like, I just love listening to this guy talk about movies.
Oh yeah, me too.
I think
we said last time he's like, he's probably really good in pitch meetings.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
I highly recommend, like, he's speaking in front of a crowd of like students, and it is like one of the funniest stories
I've seen part of that.
Oh, it's so funny. When he finally gives the reveal for the spider, it's like the best punchline I've ever seen. It's beautiful. But like, again, like,
this motherfucker finally got his spider.
He finally got his spider.
No, but I just but it's even then, it's so much funnier. He's like, I was invited to go see a movie that John Peters produced called The Wild Wild West. And then everyone in the crowd gets the joke before it's over.
It's the
funniest thing.
Yeah. Yeah, John Peters is like a comical villain, and I love a comical villain, but he's still doing stuff, man. The guy just produced Star is Born a couple years ago, mm-hmm. got nominated for a friggin' Oscar, I think was involved with Man of Steel as well as Superman Returns. So he continued to sort of like circle the Superman IP for many years after this. So,
but he's a guy that nobody likes.
Yeah. No one respects him. As most producers, they're fucking assholes.
No, but it's interesting though. Like this is the kind of story that you hear about, like when you're younger and just getting into movies, and there's like little nods that maybe this production was crazy because of one voice. Mm. And you hear ideas where you're like, there's no way they were actually that crazy. There's no way there was a guy that was this out of his mind. And John Peters is that guy who wants fighting polar bears in a Superman movie.
They're the most deadly animal in the animal kingdom.
No, that's the other thing. It's like, he wants a spider. He's like, spider is one of the most deadly predators. And then later he wants polar bears. Well, polar bears are some of the most deadly predators. And then he wants ninjas.
Hey, don't you know
ninjas are the world's most deadly predators?
They're the fiercest killers in the animal kingdom.
What the fuck?
Why? It's great stuff.
Oh, but he's talking about jujitsu, all the jujitsu that he does.
No, but this guy's an asshole. I can't stand people like this that go into a pitch meeting and they don't get what they want, so they put the guy in a fucking headlock.
Yeah, he's literally putting his employees in headlocks.
He's a piece of shit.
Oh,
here's the thing.
He says,
oh, people criticize me of being like heavy-handed or whatever. And he says, well, I have to in order to, like, get things moving. And it's like, yeah, maybe if the production doesn't have somebody to fill that role. But it fucking did already. Mm-hmm. Right. You're just butting heads.
Yes.
Right. At that point.
Yeah, all you're doing is inserting yourself. And the thing about producers, and this is a cliche, but they are people with power, but, like, do not have the talent to direct or write or act or edit or shoot. And so they produce. Like, it's like they want to be involved in movies, but they can't actually do anything helpful in order to get a movie made. So they only do the most unhelpful things.
Right. Like, that would be me. Yeah. Like, I would be a perfect producer.
But John Peters is one of those guys who has power and only uses it for the sake of using it, really, because he really doesn't have any good ideas.
Right. I don't think that you would be as closed off to collaboration.
Oh, definitely not. No, exactly. But I would be a good producer because I don't have any talent elsewhere, is what I'm saying. For sure.
I'll talk to you in the future, Nick.
When I need you to put we're putting a team together.
That's
Nick.
Right.
I can get people to move and get that vision going, you know?
The vision going.
We need a giant spider. No flying, no suit, and he fights a giant spider at the end.
Oh, but none of that's true.
I love that he tried to deny that. It's so obviously bullshit.
And then, well, it's really funny because he denies the first two accusations, and then the third one, he's like, well, yeah, you need a spider.
No, I need a Thanagarian snare beast. Let's just be very clear. It's not a spider. It's a Thanagarian snare beast. The snare beast.
I'm still confused by what this movie was going to be. But here's what I got out of it.
Yeah.
So we already said Tim Burton directing, Nicolas Cage as Superman. Just like in the comics around this time, Superman dies. And comes back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the main villain was Brainiac as several thousand spiders and snake creatures. Mm. And played by... Christopher Walken, maybe, right? That was the plan?
That was the big...
He was never confirmed or anything.
Yeah. Walken or Jim Carrey, they said too, maybe.
Yeah.
Yes, but they didn't love Jim Carrey. They were more... they were more on board for what Christopher Walken could do. So.
The only thing they seem sure about is that Kevin Spacey was going to play Lex Luthor.
Which he eventually does.
Which he eventually did.
Yes.
Right.
And that role fits him.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think he's a good Luthor.
Do you hate that movie? Superman Returns?
Kinda.
Yeah. I don't know what I feel about it.
I kind of hate it. Yeah, I do.
It's kind of weird.
Can we take a few steps back here, though? Because, can you imagine, like, thousands of Christopher Walken, like, just spiders? Just, wow, I'm going to get you.
Like, I can't, Nick, but I'll do my best.
Only in my nightmares.
How insane is that? Who thought of that? How was everybody on board with that idea? Okay, nobody was like, yeah, that's a bad idea.
If it's that crazy, just go even wackier, though. Like, that's nuts enough as it is. And
it,
like, just, no
it
one's
sounds
gonna,
like Spy Kids.
No one's going to buy it. Make Steve Buscemi the spider guy.
Snare beast, guys. Snare beast.
Snare beast, yes.
Who's the villain that kills Superman in Batman v Superman?
Doomsday.
Doomsday. He wasn't in this movie?
They were going to have Doomsday, I guess, but it seemed like they forgot about him. They kept saying he needs to be in it, but
they wanted Doomsday they wanted Batman to die, or I'm sorry, Superman to die, and they wanted Batman in Times Square announcing it on the TV that Superman died.
Which is the worst trope in all of movies.
And they wanted the funeral to match that of Princess Diana.
Right.
Which happened at the time of this.
Correct.
Crazy fucking shit.
And I think Zack Snyder, finally paid that off.
How crazy is that to say?
Or most of that. So here's what's up with this with this movie, Superman Lives. This was after the success of the Tim Burton Batman movies, but also after the failure of the Joel Schumacher Batman movies. Yes. So it was kind of like this weird gray area, late 90s, right at the tail end of the independent movement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, blockbuster filmmaking, I think filmmaking in general around the early 2000s kind of saw a bit of a lull. And this movie, you know, pays specific mention to the a massive number of box office bombs, like high budget box office bombs, specifically at Warner Brothers. And so, you know, Tim Burton was brought on to do to Superman what he did to Batman. And he brings on three screenwriters at three different phases of the production. First, it's Kevin Smith. Then it's Wesley Strick. And then it's Dan Gilroy.
It's weird.
Which are just three guys that I would not think to put in a room together to collaborate on a script.
They couldn't be more wildly different.
The only thing that stuck from Kevin Smith's script was the title.
Yeah, yes, basically, yeah.
Which is a better title than what they had before. They were going to call it Superman Rebirth.
Reborn.
Or Reborn, and he changed it to Superman Lives, which is, yeah, just a more sexy title. Yeah. And also based on the Fletch sequel.
That's the inspiration. You know, Flex, it's great. Fletch.
That's a great movie.
That's the most you ever Kevin seen that Smith movie? Ass no. fucking idea.
Anything with libs in front of it is honestly a good movie. Anything with libs in front of it.
Fletch fucking rules. I just want to say that right now. Fletch is great. I've never seen Fletch Lives, but Fletch is amazing. Just never, an amazing 80s
Oh,
comic.
You've never seen Fletch Lives? Oh, so much better, Nico.
It could be. What do I know? So what do you guys think about this Kevin Smith script? Do you buy that this would have been good?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Probably not. I mean, when he went off saying, like, it's just fan fiction, it's just a fanboy jerking himself off. I mean, yeah, of course not. But
I think he knows it wouldn't have been.
Yeah, he doesn't sound very confident in it either.
Mm-hmm. I think so. For him, he was a young guy in Hollywood, and it was a fun little exercise for him. Either from some insecurity or something like that, he knew he was not going to be working in the final project because he shot himself in the foot and said, bring Tim Burton in. Like, he knew he wasn't qualified, so there's no way he was that attached to the script, right?
And that sensibility definitely would not have lined up with Tim Burton's sensibility.
Right.
And it is kind of too bad that Kevin Smith, I guess it's not too bad, he's embraced this, the role as, like, a cult filmmaker in the indie scene, and he has this universe of quirky characters, and he never really got a shot at big blockbuster stuff. I would have been interested to see what his superhero movie would look like.
Well, it's called Dogma. Are you fucking kidding me? It's Dogma.
Dogma.
That's a superhero movie. That's what it is.
I guess he's right.
I guess.
That's what it is.
I don't know. Like, he definitely loves comic books more than 99.99% of screenwriters.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so I would be interested to at least see what it would look like if he was in the room. You know, like, if I'm James Gunn and I'm working on the next Suicide Squad movie, why not have Kevin Smith hanging out?
I mean, it can't get any worse.
Yeah. No. You seen that trailer, by the way?
Yes.
Dude, how about that Stallone shark?
I know. Nom nom. Yes, I saw that.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
King Shark. He's playing King Shark with a dad bod.
Dude, when I saw that Stallone was playing the shark, dude, I fucking lost it.
They're getting him to be the Groot. That's what that is, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And it looks like they have, like, a Rocket Raccoon character in there, too. Like a small little fuzzy guy.
David Dismalchin as Polka Dot Man. They have Polka Dot Man. Yeah.
Is this the final shark look?
Yeah. Yes.
This is.
Yes.
This Shrek animation.
It's like Shrek is love, Shrek is life animation. It's
oh my God.
Shrek.
That fucking video. That's a masterpiece.
This is really what they're doing? This is real?
Yes.
It's voiced by Sylvester Stallone.
Yes. Oh, you haven't watched the trailer?
No, thankfully.
Red Band trailer.
Check it out. It's fucking nuts. And it looks awful. It does not look good. They fight Patrick Starr at the end, except he's like 100 feet tall.
Yes, literally.
Yeah.
Yes. They fight a giant starfish.
Man.
I don't know.
It might be good.
I don't know.
It's James Gunn. I don't know. I like the Guardians movies.
Yes, I do too. It just looks really...
I blame Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah.
What have they done?
Anywho. So, yeah, the Kevin Smith script just sounded like Amazing Spider-Man 2. Just like this oversaturated, just
yes.
Too many characters, too much of a fanboy jerking himself off. and like not enough, whether it be like pathos or just like logic. This movie didn't seem particularly logical.
No, but he seemed aware of that. There's like what Nick said, there seemed to come a point where he was aware that this wasn't going to end up in his hands. So he just wrote the most fan fictiony thing to make himself happy. Mm. But he in that interview I was talking about, or not really interview, but that press thing that he did in front of all those kids or whatever, he talks about how like he wasn't really broken up about this at all, you know, because he got paid to do whatever he wanted with the script, and he got paid a lot of money just to fuck around with it. Mm. So that was that.
He would have done it for free.
Yes. Yeah.
Probably has several times.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I see it, he got paid to have some fun and make it somebody else's problem.
Yep. No. Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
Who cares? Yeah. Yeah, he's not the villain here at all. Okay. No. I have no problem with what Kevin Smith did.
No, me neither.
It's fine. And, you know, here's another thing. Like, I actually think that it seems to me that he was like a young guy in Hollywood and he seemed a little insecure about himself or something, that he wouldn't even attempt to try to take on this project by himself. Right.
Mm.
But he seemed actually a lot more knowledgeable about Hollywood than maybe he gives himself credit for, because he knew that script wasn't going to be the same at the end, you know?
Here's the thing about guys like Kevin Smith is they take a million of these meetings a year. You know, it's like the guys like Kevin Smith are constantly been like, so give us your take on like what's going on with Aquaman. And like, do you maybe have a pitch on like a reboot of Gone with the Wind? Like this happens all, you know, just guys like Kevin
Smith.
Gone
with the Wind 2, Gone Further.
Right.
Oh God. Gone Further, Jesus.
So it's just they're constantly taking these meetings and the projects are constantly falling through. That's what you hear about all the time. Mm-hmm. And so like I'm sure at first it's very frustrating to hear this time after time after time, just no, or you're not quite right for the project, or we want to take it in another direction, or the money's not quite there. And I think probably the first 5 to 10 years of Kevin Smith's career were just a slog, but eventually I think he realized very quickly that big budget blockbusters are not for him. It's not his world. And I think now he has a healthy perspective on it. You know?
Well, and like, I mean, hey, if you can fund your personal projects by writing scripts that go nowhere, like fine, who cares, right?
He's definitely turned down stuff that I don't know how those movies would have turned out, but like maybe would have helped, I don't know, his profile, I guess. Ben Affleck wanted him to do Good Will Hunting.
Wow.
He's like, please make my movie. And Kevin Smith's response was like, he reads it, he's got it in front of him, and he's like, no, you need an actual director to make this movie.
Wow.
But there's a bit of me, I guess,
so
I don't know.
He's so self-aware, though. He's so much more self-aware than most people in Hollywood.
He might have been able to make, it would have been a very different movie, but he might have been able to make some version of Good Will
Hunting.
It
would not have been the movie that made me sob in front of my guy friends.
No.
All right.
No, and I'm agreeing with you there. But like, it does speak something to him where he's like, he doesn't have the confidence to at least like try it out. I don't know.
Or he has the self-awareness to know his role, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that.
But I mean, like Chasing Amy is a little more mature, I guess.
Yeah.
So
Chasing Amy's good. It's not Good Will Hunting.
No.
I think it's probably his most mature movie, like his like most grounded emotional movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like he's got a good niche.
I agree.
I feel like he's found his world.
Yes.
And he's comfortable there, and we're all comfortable with him there.
What I'm saying is there's definitely a bit of Kevin Smith that actually chose that instead of it.
There's kind of a self-sabotage, you're saying?
Yeah. It wasn't totally enforced on him is what I'm saying.
He could totally have, like, in 5 or 10 years, like, a little renaissance and, like, get into the mainstream still. Like, he's still young.
Oh, dude, he's got plenty of movies left in him. It's
you know
not
what
like
I mean?
John Carpenter, where he's totally given
he's
up.
He's a young guy. That's a good point.
Exactly.
I could see him in like 10 years, like all of a sudden busting out like an Oscar nominee out of nowhere or something. So something really mature. And like, I mean, I think of Adam Sandler's career. I know different from directing to acting, but like
Kevin Smith could have made Green Book.
Yes, I agree. I'd rather see Kevin Smith's Green Book.
Oh, me too.
100%.
Well, think about a movie maybe like Birdman or something, right? Something a little more absurdist or weird. Like, he could kind of go that direction in terms of Oscar nominees, right?
Birdman?
I'm talking about, like, the absurdist aspect of Oscar nominees, not, like, the straight, boring, fucking old man movies that they always pick.
Okay.
Maybe.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes.
I think it kind of defeats the purpose of Kevin Smith, though, if he's getting nominated for an Oscar. Do you know what I'm saying? And he might even resent it.
But wouldn't that be kind of cool just to hear them say it?
Can you imagine him not showing up to accept the award?
He would show up in the hockey jersey. No question.
Dude, imagine the hockey jersey. You're right.
Best director goes to Kevin Smith.
I didn't say winner. I did not say winner. I said nominee. There are lots of nominees.
That'd be incredible.
Oh, man.
It could happen, though, is all I'm saying.
It could.
It could happen down the road.
Possible. Not likely, but possible.
Tusk 2, baby.
He could make another serious movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. He could.
That was way too much time talking about Kevin Smith for what this movie shows of him.
We've exhausted Kevin Smith.
All the, usual suspects keep returning. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's crazy how just... Because this was supposed to be, I forgot to mention this at the top of the podcast, our transition from documentary month to Nick Cage month. Because next month we are doing all Nick Cage movies. Mm-hmm. So this was supposed to be our way of dipping our toe into the waters again.
We might even dip into May a little bit. We'll see. There's a lot.
But we'll talk off air.
Yeah, we'll figure that out.
But So John Peters, we talked about his ridiculous request that Superman can't fly, that he can't wear the suit, and that he has to fight the spiders. He denies the first two, but confirmed the third one.
I'd like to point out, by the way, something interesting about John Peters is that he's been married 5 times. He's currently in his 5th marriage. 4 of those marriages ended in divorce. He's currently married to 1 Pamela Anderson.
Is that who it is? Oh, shit. I saw that she got married again. I did not know it was to John Peters.
John Peters.
That's crazy. Because wasn't she dating Julian Assange for a little while?
She was.
Yeah.
I think it was long distance.
Well, she would visit him.
Yeah, I think she was allowed in the embassy, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was.
You know, basically.
There was some conjugal visit.
I would think it was long distance. That makes a lot of sense.
I think they broke up because he just never wanted to see her. He never made the effort to go see her.
I didn't realize it was John Peters. That's crazy.
Yeah. I would love to talk to her parents. Be like, what do you think about your choices?
Her choices in men.
John Peters.
Why didn't she just marry Hoff back in the day?
I don't know.
You know?
That's a great question. That's a great question.
Has John Peters married anybody else famous?
I don't know.
I mean, if he snagged Pamela Anderson fresh off of Assange.
I don't know.
It doesn't look like anybody. Christine Forsythe, she was in some shit, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, plastic surgery. Not kind to old Christine.
Oh, boy.
Well, good for John Peters. Batting out of his league. Proud of him.
Very much out of his league.
Proud of him. This is all okay. What I wanted to mention next, because as this thing starts to take shape, you know, it starts as a very Kevin Smith nerdy. The way he described it earlier was not earnest take on Superman. Mm. And he said one of the problems with Superman Returns is that it was very earnest. It felt like it was ripped straight from the Christopher Reeves movies, but with even less heart than those movies. It just felt like karaoke,
yes.
You know, like too retro, mm-hmm. too nostalgic. It starts, you know, evolving into a more absurd Tim Burton aesthetic. And we all understand the Tim Burton aesthetic, even if we can't quite describe it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, very gothic, very dark, you know, a lot of curves, a lot of circular designs, you know, a lot of winding staircases.
I think there was a window in his home that was something you would see in a church. It's like that gothic Roman look.
Right.
It's like kind of spiraling.
Sure. Eventually, you know, this script starts to include Geiger-esque creatures. Face suckers or face huggers. Sorry.
There's like a vagina ceiling and something like that.
Yeah.
Right.
They talk about how it kind of moves away from Superman even having a villain at all and just turning into him fighting aliens.
Right. Which is interesting. And this is what the question I wanted to pose to you guys. Are you intrigued by the idea of Superman actually looking and behaving like an alien? Because that is what this movie posits, that this dude is from another planet. He is an alien. He would not land here looking like Christopher Reeve. He would not be instantly fuckable. He would be insane looking and kind of scary. And his suit would look like this sort of alien substance, like grabbing onto him to keep him alive. And it would be a little off-putting and weird. And he, the way he would behave, they write Clark Kent as sort of a hipster. Like, they write him not like as just like an old newsman just showing up and reporting for the Daily Planet. Like, no, like he would wear like sweatpants and he would have like very long hair and like a Hawaiian shirt maybe. And he would just be like a hipster. You know, they really turn into this idea of Superman being an outcast and being like alien to a concerning degree.
Yes.
Is that interesting to you?
I mean, it's a little, I mean, I don't know. It's a little more interesting than Superman to me, because I don't care for Superman at all.
Okay.
But
yeah, my Superman bar is very low as
But there is that bit of me that's like, is that really Superman? I don't know.
And I think it's more interesting in the sense that like Superman doesn't have enough flaws.
No.
That's part of what makes Superman fucking boring.
Yep.
So yeah, I think this would be interesting. I definitely see why this idea is interesting to Nick Cage, though.
Yes, I agree.
Yes. Who is a massive Superman fan, we should say. In fact, named his son Jor-El or Kal-El.
Kal-El. Jor-El is the father.
I know, but I thought, okay. Yeah. He named his son Kal-El. So that's how big of a Superman fan he is. But like, Nick Cage is not interested in like just playing the hits.
Not being Christopher Reeve.
Not interested in it. And that's like the brilliance of Nicolas Cage. And one of the reasons why I adore the man. And I think like he is a brilliant actor in his own way.
In his own way, yes.
In his own very special way.
No, he will never play it safe. He will always take the riskier version of the character. Which works, you know, less than 50% of the time, I think. Well,
he has played a superhero before. Let's not forget.
Yes.
Kick-Ass?
He played Ghost Rider.
No, he's played two superheroes.
I guess that's... No, but he's not a superhero in fucking... Oh, I guess he did
play... He is. Absolutely is.
He is.
In Kick-Ass?
Yes.
He's like a vigilante.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Batman.
That movie. Every single
really
one of them.
That's not really what I'm referring to here. I'm talking about like the Spider-Mans, which he has played a Spider-Man too, now that I think about it.
Yes, he did. Oh, he voiced a Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yes. I'm talking about superhuman superheroes. Yeah.
That's a good point. Man, Nick Cage.
Yeah. I mean, he's superhuman in the sense that he was able to brainwash his daughter into being a cold-hearted killer.
Yes, that's true.
In Kick-Ass. So.
Chloe Grace Moretz. Yeah. I'm fascinated in this movie. I think Kevin Smith put it perfectly here. It's like, back then, it was a punchline, and that photo like went viral even before the internet. Mm-hmm. But you hear it now and you're like, God, a Nicolas Cage movie? Give it to me immediately.
No, it's like this movie is the most like internet friendly movie imaginable.
Yes.
Where people just fawn over it like piranhas.
But right. Is this like
we
a
have to see this.
Is this a money making blockbuster film?
Of course.
I don't think so. Right. This is a film that loses money.
Yes. But I would still love to see it. I'd still love to see it.
Even if they made
this as cheap as possible, this is a film that loses money.
I am fascinated by this idea that like Superman is an alien. Like I'm fascinated by seeing like a alien-esque H.R. Giger like take on this material. Although I'm not always the biggest fan of Tim Burton's aesthetic, you know me. However, I do love those two Batman movies. Yeah, I'm not precious about it. And I understand that fanboys are, and like as much as we've praised Zack Snyder over the last 2 weeks for the Snyder Cut, I remember a time when everyone was criticizing Snyder for not understanding like the pathos of Superman and not understanding that he was supposed to be an ideal and a symbol and heroic rather than like this dark, angsty orphan, you know? And that's why people hate a Man of Steel. It's why people hate a Batman v Superman. I don't care. I've never been precious about any of that stuff.
See, here's the real issue is people think they hated Man of Steel because it didn't match what they expected, but really, they hated it because it was bad. Because you can break expectations.
That was good.
If you make a good movie, right?
Yes, Nick.
And I think that's really what it comes down to. This is what I hate about. This is why I hate fans. I hate fandoms so fucking much. It's easy to point out that something's bad, but they think they know why.
Yeah,
and they're always wrong.
That's a great point. People forget
and they
that
think
Man
they
could have
done it better, right? It's like, oh, why? No, and really, their version would have just been safe.
Yes, exactly.
The fanboys' version would have been just fucking color by numbers.
Yes. When in actuality, they're just not admitting the fact that, okay, maybe this movie's just a dour slog, you know?
Right. It's not a bad movie because the Superman logo doesn't look right. You know? That's just not the reason. It's not a bad movie because the cape is the wrong shade of red.
Although Justice League might be bad because Superman's face is a little weird.
Fair enough. So, yeah, I mean, all this stuff about the Fortress of Solitude is really hilarious. Like, why would you need guards at the Fortress of Solitude?
I kind of got
that made me chuckle.
It's the Fortress of Solitude. He's there alone. Why would Superman need guards? He's Superman. What are you talking about?
And why would those guards be polar bears?
I love it that interview again. It's like, you want me to write a scene with Superman razzling some polar bears?
Yeah.
Do you know anything about polar bears? No.
And I love how Kevin Smith like says it to other people. They're like, why would he need guards? Yes. The Fortress of Solitude?
There's nobody there.
What are they guarding? Here's kind of an issue I have with this documentary. Spends probably 45 minutes to an hour talking about Superman's outfit. And I gotta be honest with you, I don't give a shit.
They get in the weeds a lot with the production design.
Yes,
I really don't give a shit. I wonder now, it could just be access to people and what those people did on the film, right? I mean, if you have access to all the costume designers, they're all gonna talk costume design. And you kind of have to take what you can get, especially if it's like a Kickstarter project like this, right? So that could be the problem. I did notice a noticeable absence of Nicolas Cage interview.
Well, yes.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
So
I will say, in regards to the costume design, I think one of the advantages of Hodorowski's Dune as opposed to this movie is that Hodorowski's Dune had that incredible Bible to go off of.
Mm-hmm.
And it had these incredible sketches that the documentarians were able to bring to life, both with narration, but also some animation. I don't know how much pre-production actually went into this movie. And, you know, the one thing that we have besides these the interviews with these people is that photo. The photo kind of is the story of Superman Lives.
Yes.
And so a lot of the movie is devoted to the making of that photo. And I agree with you. I think they get too much into the weeds.
Yeah.
It could have easily been 45 minutes, this documentary, no question.
Sure. The only reason it's there is to give you some perspective on like what this could have been, you know?
Right.
To give you some grounding of like visually what they were going for, which sort of gives you a better understanding of the tone.
Right. I will say the most interesting thing was like the artist, production designer, whatever, that quit the Matrix in order to work on this movie.
Poor guy.
I feel so bad for that dude.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Talk about like all time bad moves.
Yeah,
like, bad career
the
moves.
The worst move.
It's like Brian Dunkelman leaving American Idol.
Adam, was that joke for you or was it for me?
I don't
know who that joke was for.
I thought there could have been someone sitting behind me, but there's nobody here.
Whoever it's for, they know who they are.
Okay.
They know who they are. Brian Dunkelman was the original co-host of American Idol with Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, before what's his face?
No, Ryan Seacrest and Brian Dunkelman hosted together season one.
Oh.
And then he left.
What did he go on to do?
And he really just gave the reins
Google
to Seacrest.
Nothing. Cameos. Cameos for $29.99.
This is a bad reference, Nico.
Listen, the real ones are out there and they know who they are and they are applauding.
Okay.
I'll be right
back.
Oh,
okay.
I'll be right back.
He had to leave. He couldn't take it.
All this American Idol talk. American comedian, actor, and television personality, best known as being co-host with Ryan Seacrest for the first season of American Idol. Other work. It's literally two sections of his Wikipedia page. American Idol and other work.
Oh, no.
He was on an episode of Friends. He was on My Name is Earl.
Okay.
It looks like his whole career is like, I'm the guy that quit American Idol. 2019, Dunkelman was on the third episode of season one of the CNBC series Back in the Game, hosted by Alex Rodriguez.
Oh, God. God, I hope he's getting paid well for those because he ain't got nothing else.
What is the premise? Professional athletes and entertainers are some of the best people in the world, but their careers are often short-lived, and they can find themselves in serious financial distress after their professional career eclipses and the big paycheck stops. Rodriguez mentors four various athletes and entertainers. I love that you fucked up your career so much that you have to turn to A-Rod for advice.
Oh, no.
Everything good?
Yeah, I just had to pee really bad.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Hold it in, Nick.
I really got to get like a tube.
Jesus.
They make those for like when you drive.
They make them for women. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. Those ones that like
women
like,
have these like funnels, some of them that they hook up to their cooch and they can just pee right into it. Like a little bag, and then they throw out the bag. And
Mikhail and I drove by.
Seems a little messy.
We drove by a building the other day called Cincy V Steam. And we're like, what the hell is V Steam? And she she looks it up, but it is what you think it is.
What is
vaginal steaming?
Vaginal steaming.
You can go here and get your vag steamed.
Steamed? Wow.
Can you have a vaginal steam? No, I think it's a lady thing. I don't think men are allowed.
Oh, I don't like that. I want my balls steamed.
Yeah, I don't think it's, I think it would be Cincy T steam. I think that's on the other side of the city.
The other side.
If you want your balls steamed, that's different.
I would like, yes.
One's a big blue building, the other's a big pink building.
I would enjoy that. Didn't even know it was a thing that happened, but it sounds great.
What does that mean, though? Steaming, what do you, why?
Like, you squat over like a hot bath, and they said they can fill the water with like basil. And
it's to make it smell fresh.
Yeah, you can add like different herbs.
It's an odor thing.
Yeah, you can add some pesto and garlic maybe, and
some marinara sauce.
Right. We're eating out tonight.
Shit. Damn it, Nick.
Let me ask you some questions about this Superman Lives movie. Some casting decisions. Would it have worked? We talked about Nick Cage as Superman. Would it have worked?
In its own way, it would have worked, sure. In its own way.
This always happens with Nick Cage. He's just one of those people where he eclipses the role. He eclipses the film. And Superman is a pretty big role for someone to eclipse. But I still think that this wouldn't have been a Superman movie. This would have been the Nick Cage Superman movie.
And that, they address this in the movie, though. I think Kevin Smith is the one. I don't remember if it was Kevin Smith, but somebody says, like, yeah, no, you want to see the symbol. You don't want to look at that and be like, oh, what's Nick Cage doing in this movie? So
it might have worked, but it would have always been distinct.
Again, I would have loved to have seen it.
Yeah, I'm willing to give it a shot. I'm willing to give it a shot.
Yeah, they compare Cage to Keaton, and they spend actually a lot of time on this. About
I think whoever thinks they can make that comparison is definitely missing something. I'm not sure what.
Mm. But Michael Keaton was, you know, criticized all the way back in 1989. You know, Mr. Mom as Batman. How does that make much sense?
Mm-hmm.
I understand the premise. Like, Keaton was definitely a quirky guy, sort of like slightly off center in terms of like a traditional leading man. You don't generally think of him as a tough guy. And I think that casting decision along with that movie was a bit of a deconstruction of the Superman archetype. And Cage definitely would have done that as well. I think we've learned over the years, though, that Keaton has a lot of the qualities of a traditional leading man,
mm-hmm.
whereas Nicolas Cage purposely does not. And that's cool. I don't know. I don't think of him as the man that can hold the gun. And I don't think of him as the man with the cape.
Nope.
You know? Even though I've seen him hold a gun and wear a cape several times.
And it's lovely.
Right.
And it's wonderful.
But it's wonderful because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right?
Sometimes. Yeah. Or it works as intended. It's just the intention is not, you know, always what you think of as like a comic book movie or an action movie.
Yeah. it wouldn't have worked in the way that this movie needed, I guess we could say. But it works in Mandy.
Yes.
Well, like, it wouldn't have worked in order for this movie to make money.
Yes.
I think exactly. That's what it comes down to, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, like, Tim Burton is a weird person because he makes both, like, blockbusters and cult films at the same time.
Mm.
I guess he's, like, the mainstream cult film director.
I guess.
Does that make sense?
Well, he's definitely the weirdest guy to be embraced by Disney.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
But like, the Hollywood machine kind of trusts Tim Burton to do his thing a lot more.
He's a good filmmaker.
Right.
Yeah, but like, you don't think, again, he's making oftentimes like family friendly stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He was given the keys to the Willy Wonka franchise.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
He made Frankenweenie for Disney. That was some of his earliest work was for the Disney Corporation.
This is his first movie, Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah,
Big Adventure.
It was.
That was his first movie. That's a crazy thing to just be handed to
Pee-wee's
him.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure was his first movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, I he's definitely the strangest wolf to be let into the hen house.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, Chris Rock is Jimmy Olsen.
Sure, I don't care.
Fine.
Whatever.
Fine.
I don't think that role is significant enough to matter.
No.
Guess who's playing Jimmy Olsen?
Like, that's fine. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
Sandra Bullock as Amy, as I wrote down as Amy Adams, as Lois Lane.
I would love to
see. Are Amy Adams and Lois Lane now interchangeable in my brain?
It's the alliteration there, I think.
Oh, no, I don't like that. Sandra Bullock as Lois Lane.
Maybe.
That would have been a real blow to her career.
Yes, it would have. But maybe.
I think that's too low for her.
Yeah. I don't know. Do we care about Lois Lane too? I don't know.
Well, I think Amy Adams is probably a better actress than Sandra Bullock, but is a worse Lois Lane. I don't think she's a very good Lois Lane at all.
No, I don't think so either.
I think she's actually very bad in that role.
Yes.
So I'm not even sure like caliber of actor here is.
Well, here's the thing. You have to be, for this movie, you have to be someone who is okay with dating the weird Nick Cage alien.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Right.
But also probably occupied some space in like the action movie scene, which she did.
But that's a good point. Like Winona Ryder and Edward Scissorhands is like the perfect example. Like she's an attractive young actress and like you buy that there's a romance and you also buy that she would like be into a dude with knives for hands.
Actually, she would work for this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very well.
And she's just weird enough, but also like very charming and attractive too.
But she's also very weird. Winona Ryder's a little crazy.
Yes.
So
yeah, that's why. No, it works.
I think we could use somebody like that.
Sure. She did Dracula, dude.
Yeah, I don't know about Sandra Bullock here, but not for any issues with her. Just I don't think the role's right.
Walking as Brainiac.
Sure.
No.
Sure. Go ahead.
No.
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 Do it.
Do not give me 1,000 Christopher Walken spiders. That doesn't work.
Yes, please. All right. Woody Allen is Brainiac.
No.
Right, there you go.
You can have all of the villains be like pedos. That's, come on. We already have Kevin Spacey. Gotta.
I was just exploring a healthy sexual curiosity.
I don't know, man. I don't know about walking here.
And yes,
yeah, what's
Luther is the other one, obviously.
Yeah, that
he plays Doomsday.
Dude, do you find any of like these giant CGI villains interesting at all?
I kind of didn't mind Steppenwolf.
Oh boy,
I didn't hate him in Zack Snyder's. Put it that way. I did not like him in the Justice League.
Oh boy,
very bad at that. He's a little bit better. The answer is no, by the way.
Okay.
but I'll give him some credit.
Only if they're Thanos.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Josh Brolin.
Brolin, baby.
Brolin.
What were you saying, Nick?
Nothing.
Okay. I'm all out of notes on this movie. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
There's not really a conclusion here. A lot of time spent on the outfit, again. I don't know if this documentary totally works.
Well,
I don't know, man. I mean, it's just, we talked about how Kevin Smith has talked about this story already. Mm-hmm. And this just feels like another rehashing of that with just like some additional characters to confirm what he says, you know? And he gets Tim Burton in there. He gets, I don't know, I guess he got like 2 hours with Tim Burton or something. And that was worthwhile, I think, hearing mm-hmm. what Burton had to say about this production. But
it definitely confirms a lot of like suspicions some might have with big studio productions like this. Like if you want like a case in point example as to why certain producers are total idiots, here is the movie to give you those ideas, I guess.
I'm not even entirely sure, though, that that's the only reason this movie failed.
No.
Right? I mean, at the end of the day, this was just strictly a budget issue. We have been going through a lot of movies that have been bombing, and, you know, we're going to cut your budget and we're going to give it to Will Smith for The Wild West.
Have you guys seen that movie, Wild Wild West?
I've never seen it.
Maybe seen it. Parts of it once. I've never seen the whole thing.
I've seen it quite a few times as a kid. And I put the movie down for many years and watched it again. and I thought I should have been thrown in prison for liking it at a young age.
Wow.
It's really bad.
We've talked about doing it on the pod for years.
Oh.
Years we've been talking about it.
We should.
Really bad.
Yeah,
we should.
Maybe later this year we'll do it.
Yeah. I don't see why not.
I guess it's a fun bad, you know? It's entertaining, but it's like not good at all.
No, yeah, it's a notorious bad decision for like the biggest movie star at the time. Will Smith was so big and he makes that piece of shit.
Yeah.
Who directed that movie?
Barry Sonnenfeld.
Oh goodness.
Barry
That's
Sonnenfeld.
Right. Sonnenfeld did do that.
Yep.
Because it was right after Men in Black, right?
Yep.
It was like 2 years after.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one. Let's file that one away.
Yeah. That John Peters.
That John Peters, man. Never misses.
Nope.
The hits keep on coming. Let's play a game. How many Drew Carey? Okay.
John Boy.
I think we can go. I guess we could do John Peters, although I don't know how interesting that would necessarily be. Pamela Anderson is an option.
No.
And Tim Burton, right?
I think Tim Burton's, it's either Tim Burton or John Peters. I guess Kevin Smith. But
yeah. Will we ever have another chance to talk Tim Burton here, really?
Probably not. I think for the most part, he makes pretty good movies that are hard to make fun
hard
of.
To talk about, really.
We could do the Willy Wonka movie.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe one day.
Yeah. I'd love to talk about those two side by side. That's fun.
Yeah, I'm actually, I have a lot of thoughts on that movie. Like, I have an unusual amount of thoughts on that movie.
Well, the Gene Wilder one's one of my favorite movies. And then that other one.
I've spent a lot of time thinking about it because I've seen it a lot.
I have to.
Have you guys watched the, I highly recommend, there's a YouTube video out there about Snowpiercer and Willy Wonka.
The new
guy,
or the old one?
I think the new Willy Wonka and Snowpiercer.
Okay.
And this guy makes an argument. It's an entire video essay, like 45 minutes long, and he makes an argument that the villain character from Snowpiercer is young Charlie after he got the factory. And it's incredible, and I highly recommend it. I cannot recommend it enough.
Wait. Has the time? 45 minutes. All right, maybe. I'll check it out.
You're saying Ed Harris at the end of Snowpiercer is Charlie Bucket?
Listen here. I'm going to type, and you're going to hear my typing.
Okay. I can hear you typing. What are you talking?
Here's how Snowpiercer is a sequel to Willy Wonka.
Yeah, why Snowpiercer is a sequel to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. It's only 15 minutes, actually. It's a lot more.
They are saying it's the original. That's what all the screenshots are.
Oh, the original?
Yeah.
It's been a while. It's been like 4 years since I watched this. Highly recommend it. It's so fun. You will find yourself buying into it at the end, even though you fully know it's bullshit. It's fantastic.
Interesting.
And a lot of, he goes deep into the filmography of Bong Joon-ho, it looks like.
Oh, God.
All right, I'll check this out afterwards. Okay, so net worth of Tim Burton. I'll go first. I'll say Tim Burton is worth $30 million. So that's going to make him worth about one-sixth of a Drew Carey. Drew Carey worth $190 million.
$30 million, really?
I might go a little higher.
That feels low to me.
Yeah. Okay. I think he's worth, my gut is telling me 60. I even think that might be a hair low, but I feel better about that. So that's 3.16, 60 million for Tim Burton.
CelebrityNetWorth.com describes Tim Burton as a American film director, film producer, writer, poet, and stop motion artist.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
So you got to keep in mind those poetry royalties.
You know what I honestly think? I think that
keep in mind those Tim Burton poem NFTs.
I would not be shocked if he actually gets a lot of money doing stop motion, like consulting and stuff.
He does produce a lot of those movies.
Yeah.
Direct Coraline?
He didn't. No, I don't think he directed it, but I think he was involved.
Yeah.
Let's not forget about the what am I trying to say? The merchandising royalties from
Nightmare Before Christmas which is at Disney popular. World.
Yep.
Good t-shirts points. And all that shit.
He didn't. Good point.
He didn't direct that one either. But
to keep this, my guess was going to be right around Adams, but to keep it interesting for the sake of interest, I'm going to say $100 million.
Okay. Ooh, okay.
All right. 30, I was going to say 65, but I'm going to bump it up a bit.
Okay. 30, 60, and 100. One of us got it exactly right.
Yeah.
No, it's probably Adam.
The actual net worth of American director, producer, writer, poet, and stop motion animator Tim Burton. $100 million!
Wow.
Nick just won this week's edition of...
You fucker.
How many Drew Careys?
See, I thought I was going a little over. I thought I was going a little high, but...
What's up?
Wow. That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
Yeah. Good for him.
For the guy that made Edward Scissorhands. A lot of money in barbers with knives for hands.
I love that movie.
A lot of money in that.
That's a good movie.
I like that movie too. Okay. Next week, Nick Cage here on the podcast.
What's on the calendar, Nico?
Lots of shit is on that calendar. We need to sort it out.
There's a movie on our list that is supposedly coming out soon.
Yeah.
But there is no information about where it's coming out.
It was supposed to come out 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. So it's supposed to be out.
It did not come out 2 weeks ago. Like, it was on the release calendar, and like they had it planned, and then the day came and the movie didn't show up, and the studio Lionsgate, who distributes it, never said like, hey, we're moving this around.
What do you want to do? Sue them for ruining our schedule?
Yes,
podcast schedule?
I do. As a matter of fact, I do.
Here's the thing. We have, I'm not exaggerating, 8 potential Nick Cage films to watch here.
Oh my God.
Yes.
I am not exaggerating.
That means we talk about 2 movies.
We could.
I think, well, we're definitely going to make this a yearly segment.
If I wanted to, we could carry this shit until October.
Okay.
This man has a filmography that I have not seen.
So let's say April's going to be Nick Cage month. Mm-hmm. But if The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent comes out at a later date this year, we're going to have to drop everything and just watch it.
I think that's fair.
Because it is like the most wisest thing movie that you can possibly imagine.
Okay.
Like it is so us. But yeah, let's do Nick Cage month and we'll figure out the specific movies as we move through the weeks.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Shameless plug. Do go to our YouTube channel. I've been YouTubing people.
He's been YouTube.
I'm learning the algorithm. I'm riding the wave of the YouTube algorithm right now. And it's been crashing and burning, but doesn't mean I'm not going to keep trying. If you could just take a little bit out of little time out of your day, go to the website, toomanythoughtsmedia.com or tmt.media or my social media or the Discord. I put the link everywhere. I've done 2 videos so far. I'm trying to put one out every Tuesday. I no longer do the Cultured Podcast. It's now a video series, and the lighting, I guarantee you, is better than The Death of Superman Lives.
Oh, look at you.
Guarantee it. Can't say the content's better, but the lighting is definitely better. So if you would be so kind, just go there, give it a little thumbs up, give us a subscribe. It would really mean the absolute world to me. I'm just starting to figure this game out. I've waited a long time. I've put it off for years. You know me and my thoughts on YouTube. And Yeah. Well, I've caved. I've sold out. I've caved. And this is what I do now. So go watch the Cultured video series if you would be so generous. Video on the Grammys, video on the Snyder Cut. Don't know what I'm doing yet this week.
Godzilla.
Yeah, I may have to talk Godzilla.
I'll be there with you.
Okay. I love you so very, very much. And until next time, you've all been so very, very naughty.
Naughty.